Good morning, and thank you very much, Inés. The Center for Latin American Initiative, the George Washington University, for inviting the OAS today after these two very important meetings. I want to salute, of course, colleagues from the OAS. Every active member state of the OAS has regular elections, free, fair, credible most of the times. Some still need help, but at least there is a direction which everybody recognizes as that we have a democratic framework in the 34 member states. And that's a major achievement if you compare it with 30 years, 25 years ago. So we should not forget that achievement. And we have to recognize also something which we sometimes tend to forget is the enormous diversity which is there in the Western Hemisphere, within the subregions, within the Americas as a whole. Very small economies, very big economies, you know, population, size, opportunities, political history, language. In this diversity, it's very difficult to reach consensus on many issues. And that we reach consensus is one of the greatest assets I believe the OAS can bring as an institution to this grouping of country. We have to recognize also that because of this diversity, the interest, the objectives of every country, every sub-region is different from each other. The Caribbean has different objectives of being part of this inter-American system. As a settled democracy, their focus is on development. Central America, transforming into very stronger democracies, security is an issue there. In South America, the Andean community, we speak about much more about how to consolidate and strengthen the democratic framework. So every region has different interests and objectives, and we cannot have one size-fit-all approach. So we will need to focus on a much more differentiated multilateral diplomatic framework in the Americas. And I think that is where those issues which were discussed in the Summit of the Americas in Trinidad and Tobago, that's how it should play out. Whether it's on energy, on migration, on all the other key issues which were identified and which were listed by Tom Shannon a while ago, we'll have to put this in that context of a differentiated multilateral approach. I think it's also to recognize, and you will not be surprised to hear that from me, that the OAS is the only institution which can provide this kind of consensus building. 34 member states, there is no other institution in the Americas which can bring 34 member states together around one table. They may differ from opinion, they may have strong discussions, as we have seen in the Summit of the Americas, as well as in San Pedro Sula, but the only place where you can reach this political consensus, this concerted action, this collective action, is in the OAS. I'm welcome, and we have stated that often, we welcome sub-regional bodies, because that helps building that consensus. So that's a good thing. But I think any idea of other kinds of arrangements is not going to be all-inclusive in the Western Hemisphere. While these are positives in the reality in which we live, there are some challenges which we indeed face. I think we live in a time where we face highest levels of tension in the Western Hemisphere. And we have not spoken about that so much in San Pedro Sula, but they have not ceased to exist. Problems between countries in South America. Ecuador and Colombia still have difficulties in terms of building a relationship. We have many difficulties within the southern, within South America, as well as in Latin America, Central America, as well as in the Caribbean on border issues. Something like 200 outstanding disputes in the Americas. Without resolving these disputes, the integration process is going to be very difficult. So we have to recognize that beyond all the other political issues, we have real issues between countries which are not feasible at this point in time. So let's not forget that. I don't want to go into mentioning all these difficulties. As I mentioned, there are more than 200 of these. But it goes in every region. No region is exempted from it, from these tensions, the potential tension. Challenges remain in terms of the traditional issues. Illegal drug trafficking, HIV/AIDS, illegal trafficking, firearms, poverty, social exclusion, discrimination, all these are put under the heading of traditional. And we should not forget that there is a problem with food security in the Americas. There is a problem with energy sustainability. We have difficulties with security and the challenges which are being faced by countries. So these are key issues which need to be addressed in whatever future inter-American relation is being built. And what I'm saying here is that nobody alone can solve this problem because it's a cross-border. Almost three-quarters of the problems we mention here are multilateral in nature, cross-border in nature, transnational. So the only way to deal with them will be in a multilateral approach. You need an institution to put this on the agenda and to deal with them, because collectively only we will be able to solve these problems, not in isolation. And no country can do that in isolation. Tom mentioned something which I fully share at this point, the role of the international system. The OAS has been very much inward-oriented for a long time, and we have been starting a process of opening up the OAS to become part of the world. And I think we're getting there. I mean, the OAS has been able to strengthen relations with the United Nations system, to strengthen relations with other regional organizations worldwide, especially the African Union, for instance, where we have participation in each other's observation missions, for instance, in strengthening and exchanging views on democracy, strengthening relations with global players like in China, India, and others. So I think it's a useful exercise when we look towards the future to see how this inter-American system will fit within the global context, in the global architecture of international relations. I think it's something which has been not taken on board as yet, but I think it is quite necessary because the impact of the engagement of other countries like China, India, and other ones in the inter-American system will be felt and is being felt in many of the regions. And the diplomatic demarche are clearly stated, especially when it comes to the middle section of the Americas, the Caribbean, and Central America. So this is the reality at this point in our hemisphere. On the one hand, positives. On the other hand, clearly challenges. And we have to recognize that. Now, what has changed then? And when we went into the summit of the Americas, there was an atmosphere of a divisive nature. It was not clear if all the leaders would be attending. It wasn't clear with what message they would be going, whether it would be a positive agenda or a negative agenda. In the end, what happened, everybody went into the summit of the Americas, and I believe that same spirit continued in San Pedro Sula with a very positive, constructive attitude. And I think there are three or four reasons for that. One is, I think, that we have to recognize that over the past years, the leadership style of newly elected political leaders in Latin America emerged with their own view, independent views, if you wish, on development, on security, on foreign policy. For a long time, it was seen as something temporary, but I think it is here to stay, that you have that kind of leadership, democratically elected, which have different views on how to organize their societies. That is not going to go away. So it was not surprising for all of us to see this momentum building with regard, for instance, in this case, of on the issue of Cuba, its readmission, reinsertion in the inter-American system. That was one of the issues which went into the summit as almost a consensus of all to be at least discussed. The other issue which went as a consensus into the summit, which was not part of the negotiating process for a document, was the issue of the financial crisis. And so what you saw developing is a common agenda to be discussed at the summit, which did not exist before. Now, this would not have been possible, that kind of atmosphere, if one other thing did not happen, I believe, is because a year ago, nobody thought that a summit would be such of a critical nature. Nobody thought a year ago that the San Pedro Sula summit General Assembly would be a historical one. But I think the tone which we saw, the cordial but frank discussions which took place in the Summit of the Americas, was based also on something which happened here in the United States, and that was the election of President Barack Obama. which created a different environment, a different reality compared to 8 years before. A willingness as a consequence to listen, to dialogue, to have an understanding, to understand others, and not only to direct. And I think that is the environment. So basically, all the stars were aligned. There were practical issues to be dealt with, the financial crisis, the food crisis, the environmental issues, the security problems. These are concrete items on the agenda of every leader. They have to deal with it daily. That went into the summit. And then the atmosphere created by willingness to discuss, to have different opinions, but at least to listen to each other. So I think this resulted in what I said a couple of weeks ago, is what was there before TNT and what is there after TNT. And TNT is Trinidad and Tobago, nothing else. Somebody thought of something more complicated. I think the atmosphere, the environment, the political environment in the Western Hemisphere before TNT was quite different from the atmosphere which we find today. And that's why I say before and after TNT. In that sense, maybe in 20 years, we'll speak about a watershed moment in 2009. And I think we can already say that 2009 is a historical year for the Inter-American system, with two key meetings taking place, with key developments, key results coming from these meetings, is really remarkable. I think we should highlight also that, and I speak about the Caribbean here, but by having the summit in the Caribbean, I think something happened which I prefer, which I really liked, is that it was a reaffirmation of the Caribbean to be part of this hemisphere. It's something which we should not underestimate. We're speaking about 45.3% of the membership of the OAS with strong relations overseas. By having this summit in the Caribbean, playing a critical role in managing this process, continuing the debate on the critical issue to the summit, to the San Pedro Sula General Assembly, for me, reaffirmed that the Caribbean community clearly wants to be part of this hemisphere and is able to bring assets and to contribute to this discussion in the Inter-American system. We can discuss this in the question and answer section. And as we already stated, I think the U.S. commitment to reconstructing, redevising a new relationship with new parameters of dialogue and new engagement on a more continuous basis, almost a new type of diplomacy, is very useful in this environment. Without that, it would not have been possible, I believe. Now, in this whole, while we recognize that, of course, this is a relationship between member states, it's bilateral, but there are two things which I need to say in terms of the multilateral element of it. The two institutions which need to translate this new environment in a more positive one, in a more engaging one, and maybe revisit some of its key objectives, I think, is the Organization of American States and the Inter-American Development Bank. And when it comes to the OAS, I think it is really needs to look at fostering this new political momentum. How do you continue this political momentum in such a way that is beneficial to the political process, but also to what needs to be done in terms of the development needs? And that's where the IDB comes in. I mean, we speak about recapitalization of the IDB and the sub-regional banks and so on, but beyond that, looking at the future role of these two key Inter-American institutions together with other key Inter-American institutions like PAHO and ICA needs to be looked at. I think that's something which we should not forget in whatever design there is for the future of Inter-American relations. Now, what happened in San Pedro Sula? As I said, not only about Cuba, mostly about Cuba, but not only. I think two things I like to highlight there. One is we discussed the theme which was chosen by the host country towards a culture of nonviolence, which clearly stated in no uncertain terms the priority of Central America in the context of the security challenges they face. Lucky enough, this declaration of San Pedro Sula was already discussed in Washington, D.C. and adopted, so not much discussion. But what I was very pleased about is that almost 29 member states took the floor to express their views on, independent of the fact that the discussions on Cuba were ongoing, that it took the time to substantively respond to this issue, which indicated to me, and this has not happened before, this was one of the more substantive presentations by member states on why this is so important to them, both from the short-term perspective in terms of how you deal with the criminal activities, crime and violence in society, how you build peace, dialogue, and so on, but also much more from the structural perspective in terms of why employment is so important, why education is so important. And those are the underlying issues which need to be addressed. And I was very pleased to see that member states paid a lot of attention, not only and even after the adoption of the resolution on Cuba. Something like 12, 13 member states still wanted to take the opportunity in the late hours of the 3rd of June to focus on these issues. And I think that's a very positive sign. So the Declaration of San Pedro Sula, for those interested, you should read it. It's a very extensive document, contains a lot of information on aspirations, but I think it will be our guiding document for how to follow up on this. And of course, the public security meeting, which is scheduled for Dominican Republic later this year, will take account of that also. The second important element which I'd like to underscore is the active participation of civil society, the private sector, and the trade unions in the assembly. It was for the first year that nobody left the General Assembly disappointed or upset or went to the media complaining about not having enough time. We gave everybody enough time to have an exchange, which was very useful, very engaging also with the member states. Again, while other things were happening, this was not put on the side. This was an important engagement between civil society at large and the heads of delegations of the OAS. I must mention, of course, the permanent observers who support us so much in the work in many countries. That engagement was very useful also. You know, in some way, we should recognize, because often we speak about summits taking place and nothing is happening and what is the meaning of it, all the questions about it's a talk shop and nothing is happening. But basically what happened in San Pedro Sula within the 6 weeks after the Summit of the Americas, one of the key mandates coming from the summit was achieved. That's a resolution on Cuba. And we should not forget that this was basically one of the political mandates coming from the summit to continue the discussion, maybe not anticipated a full resolution at the San Pedro Sula's General Assembly, but at least this was completed. So I think this is very important to note. Let me say something about Cuba quickly. Ambassador Shannon already went into this, but let me give our perspective. I think there was always three issues. There was always the notion that any expectation for overnight readmission would be unrealistic. And I think that was clearly understood, maybe not completely accepted, but understood by all, that it would not happen overnight. And for that, too many things have happened in the past, too many things were developed since 1962. So it would be a step-by-step approach. It would be a process. The second element was that it would be a principled approach. The principles adopted since 1962 could not be ignored in reality at all. That would be kind of a strange thing where 34 member states adopt a document and then decide to put it aside for a while discussing another issue. That would not happen. So I think that was something which was also understood. And of course, the most important factor is the voice of Cuba need to be heard. And I think if you read the resolution, and this is a very simple resolution, it's one of the most simplest resolutions I ever seen in the OAS in my 12-year career. It's called simply Resolution 2438, Resolution on Cuba. You can't have it simpler than that. But the best way to get consensus also. Contains all these three elements, basically, which I earlier mentioned. It has four preambular paragraphs and two operative paragraphs. And it goes into that the revocation of 1962. It speaks about the principles. It speaks about the initiative of Cuba. Those are basically the three elements. And that will direct the process whenever the request comes in. So I think the resolution is almost like a win-win for everybody. Everybody can go home and say, you know, this is what I read in it, and it will satisfy the demands. I think it's too fresh to go into too much detail about how this came to be and all the several meetings taking place. It was very symbolic, in my view, very historical. A lot of energy in the room. I want to share that with you, but also in the small meetings on how that came to be. If you get a standing ovation for a resolution to be adopted every time a resolve is being read, that creates a certain dynamism in the room. And I think this goes into the historical records also in that sense. I think the resolution on Cuba can be categorized as an act of political pragmatism to be able to move forward in consensus. I think that's the safest way to describe it. That's the only way to be able to put this aside and move on and decide on how the process will be. Now let me give you, in conclusion, five or six issues which I believe will become critical in the future setting of an inter-American foreign policy or an inter-American relationship. First of all, I think structural peace building needs to continue with more energy, but much more structural, in a sense that we have to look also in a more holistic way at peace building, in terms not only of the resolving the political issues, but looking at the economic opportunities and the social potential of people. It needs to become much more holistic. Secondly, we need to address the hemispheric security challenges. And in that regard, I think while we don't have a comprehensive hemispheric security arrangement, it may be time to start thinking about something like that in the Americas. I spoke earlier about that we have democracy established, there is a framework for it, we have parliaments, we have democratic institutions, we have elections, but I think we need to move from that generation, that first generation efforts, toward the second generation efforts in terms of see how democracy can really deliver the social and economic goods for which the people elected the governments. So we have to speak about the efficiency of the state apparatus, we have to speak about accountability, transparency, public policies. That is the next generation of measures which need to be taken to support democracy in the Americas. Otherwise, it will remain very feeble and artificial. We need to build, to strengthen partnerships for shared responsibility, which means basically an inclusive process in society. As the OAS is consulting on a regular basis with civil society, with the private sector, with trade unions, I think that should become norm in countries, because I don't believe that we can hold governments alone responsible for the level of security, stability, and prosperity in societies. I think it's a shared responsibility of everybody in society. So you need to have an inclusive approach, dialogue mechanism established with these groupings. We need what I call real integral development, which is more holistic, much more centering the people rather than focusing on only trade and economics. We can talk about this a little bit more if you wish. And then foster hemispheric solidarity and commitment. And I relate here specifically to the case of Haiti. I don't think the hemisphere can tolerate a situation as it exists in Haiti and not help. It's kind of anachronistic in the context of the hemisphere. A lot of progress is being made, but you have one country not able to uplift itself out of the misery it has at this point in time. A lot of attention needs to be given to education for peace and development, addressing issues of the youth. 68% of the population of Latin America and the Caribbean is younger than 35 years of age. That's a group that cannot be ignored, and they do have real problems at this point in time. And all of this is aimed and possible, in my view, and you won't be surprised to hear this from me, through strengthened multilateralism. So, member states, please support the OAS, reconfirm your commitment to the OAS, provide the resources, because without the resources, it will not take place. Let me say in closing that for me, these two events, the Summit of the Americas and the OAS General Assembly, clearly demonstrated that the OAS is not only relevant, but also necessary, that it is capable of making decisions, if there is the political will within the member states to come to consensus. And as such, I think further strengthening this institution will be key in implementing some of the mandates coming from the Summit of the Americas, but also strengthening the Inter-American system as a whole by collaborating much more cohesively with the Inter-American institutions, the IDB, PAHO, ICA, and others. Thank you very much.